Chapter 38. Mrs. Flintwinch has another dream. The debilitated old house in the city, wrapped in its mantle of soot, and leaning heavily on the crutches that had partaken of its decay and worn out with it, never knew a healthy or a cheerful interval, let what would betide. If the sun ever touched it, it was but with a ray, and that was gone in half an hour. If the moonlight ever fell upon it, it was only to put a few patches on its doleful cloak, and make it look more wretched. The stars, to be sure, coldly watched it when the nights and the smoke were clear enough, and all bad weather stood by it with a rare fidelity. You should alike find rain, hail, frost, and thaw lingering in that dismal enclosure, when they had vanished from other places. And as to snow, you should see it there for weeks, long after it had changed from yellow to black, slowly weeping away its grimy life. The place had no other adherents. As to street noises, the rumbling of wheels in the lane merely rushed in at the gateway in going past, and rushed out again, making the listening Mistress Affery feel as if she were deaf, and recovered the sense of hearing by instantaneous flashes. So with whistling, singing, talking, laughing, and all pleasant human sounds, they leaped the gap in a moment, and went upon their way. The varying light of fire and candle in Mrs. Clennam's room made the greatest change that ever broke the dead monotony of the spot. In her two long narrow windows, the fire shone sullenly all day, and sullenly all night. On rare occasions it flashed up passionately, as she did. But for the most part it was suppressed, like her, and preyed upon itself evenly and slowly. During many hours of the short winter days, however, when it was dusk there early in the afternoon, changing distortions of herself in her wheelchair, of Mr. Flintwinch with his wry neck, of Mistress Affery coming and going, would be thrown upon the house wall that was over the gateway, and would hover there like shadows from a great magic lantern. As the room-ridden invalid settled for the night, these would gradually disappear. Mistress Affery's magnified shadow always flitting about, last, until it finally glided away into the air, as though she were off upon a witch excursion. Then the solitary light would burn unchangingly, until it burned pale before the dawn, and at last died under the breath of Mrs. Affery, as her shadow descended on it from the witch region of sleep. Strange, if the little sick room fire were in effect a beacon fire, summoning someone, and that the most unlikely someone in the world, to the spot that must be come to. Strange, if the little sick room light were in effect a watch light, burning in that place every night until an appointed event should be watched out. Which of the vast multitude of travelers, under the sun and the stars, climbing the moldy hills and toiling along the weary plains, journeying by land and journeying by sea, coming and going so strangely, to meet and to act and react on one another, which of the host may, with no suspicion of the journey's end, be traveling surely hither? Time shall show us. The post of honor and the post of shame, the general's station and the drummers, a peer's statue in Westminster Abbey, and a seaman's hammock in the bosom of the deep, the mitre and the workhouse, the woolsack and the gallows, the throne and the guillotine, the travelers to all, are on the great high road, but it has wonderful divergencies, and only time shall show us, whither each traveler is bound. On a wintry afternoon at twilight, Mrs. Flintwinch, having been heavy all day, dreamed this dream. She thought she was in the kitchen getting the kettle ready for tea, and was warming herself with her feet upon the fender, and the skirt of her gown tucked up, before the collapsed fire in the middle of the grate, be ordered on either hand by a deep cold black ravine. She thought that as she sat thus, musing upon the question whether life was not for some people a rather dull invention, she was frightened by a sudden noise behind her. She thought that she had been similarly frightened once last week, and that the noise was of a mysterious kind, a sound of rustling, and of three or four quick beats like a rapid step, while a shock or tremble was communicated to her heart, as if the step had shaken the floor, or even as if she had been touched by some awful hand. She thought that this revived within her certain old fears of hers, that the house was haunted, and that she flew up the kitchen stairs without knowing how she got up, to be nearer company. Mistress Affery thought that on reaching the hall, she saw the door of her liege lord's office standing open, and the room empty. That she went to the ripped-up window in the little room by the street door, to connect her palpitating heart, through the glass, with living things beyond and outside the haunted house. That she then saw, on the wall over the gateway, the shadows of the two clever ones in conversation above. That she then went upstairs with her shoes in her hand, partly to be near the clever ones as a match for most ghosts, and partly to hear what they were talking about. None of your nonsense with me, apostrophe said Mr. Flintwinch. I won't take it from you. Apostrophe, Mrs. Flintwinch dreamed that she stood behind the door, which was just ajar, and most distinctly heard her husband say these bold words. Flintwinch, apostrophe returned Mrs. Clennam, in her usual strong low voice, there is a demon of anger in you. Guard against it. Apostrophe, I don't care whether there's one or a dozen, apostrophe said Mr. Flintwinch, forcibly suggesting in his tone that the higher number was nearer the mark. If there was 50, they should all say, none of your nonsense with me, I won't take it from you, I'd make 'em say it, whether they liked it or not. Apostrophe, what have I done, you wrathful man? Apostrophe, apostrophe, her strong voice asked. Done? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Flintwinch. Drop down upon me. Apostrophe, if you mean, remonstrated with you, apostrophe, don't put words into my mouth, that I don't mean, apostrophe, said Jeremiah, sticking to his figurative expression with tenacious and impenetrable obstinacy. I mean drop down upon me. Apostrophe, I remonstrated with you, apostrophe, she began again, because apostrophe, I won't have it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Jeremiah. You drop down upon me. Apostrophe, I drop down upon you then, you ill-conditioned man. Apostrophe, Jeremiah chuckled at having forced her to adopt his phrase, for having been needlessly significant to Arthur that morning. I have a right to complain of it as almost a breach of confidence. You did not mean it, apostrophe, I won't have it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, interposed the contradictory Jeremiah, flinging back the concession. I did mean it. Apostrophe, I suppose I must leave you to speak in soliloquy if you choose, apostrophe, she replied, after a pause that seemed an angry one. It is useless my addressing myself to a rash and headstrong old man who has a set purpose not to hear me. Apostrophe, now, I won't take that from you either, apostrophe said Jeremiah. I have no such purpose. I have told you I did mean it. Do you wish to know why I meant it, you rash and headstrong old woman? Apostrophe, apostrophe, after all, you only restore me my own words, apostrophe she said, struggling with her indignation. Yes. Apostrophe, this is why, then. Because you hadn't cleared his father to him, and you ought to have done it. Because, before you went into any tantrum about yourself, who are apostrophe, hold there, Flintwinch. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she cried out in a changed voice. You may go a word too far. Apostrophe, the old man seemed to think so. There was another pause, and he had altered his position in the room, when he spoke again more mildly. I was going to tell you why it was. Because, before you took your own part, I thought you ought to have taken the part of Arthur's father. Arthur's father. I had no particular love for Arthur's father. I served Arthur's father's uncle, in this house, when Arthur's father was not much above me was poor as far as his pocket went, and when his uncle might as soon have left me his heir as have left him. He starved in the parlor, and I starved in the kitchen. That was the principal difference in our positions. There was not much more than a flight of breakneck stairs between us. I never took to him in those times. I don't know that I ever took to him greatly at any time. He was an undecided, irresolute chap, who had everything but his orphan life scared out of him when he was young. And when he brought you home here, the wife his uncle had named for him. I didn't need to look at you twice. You were a good-looking woman at that time, to know who'd be master. You have stood of your own strength ever since. Stand of your own strength now. Don't lean against the dead. Apostrophe, I do not as you call it lean against the dead. Apostrophe, but you had a mind to do it, if I had submitted. Apostrophe, growled Jeremiah, and that's why you dropped down upon me. You can't forget that I didn't submit. I suppose you are astonished that I should consider it worth my while to have justice done to Arthur's father? Hey? It doesn't matter whether you answer or not, because I know you are, and you know you are. Come, then, I'll tell you how it is. I may be a bit of an oddity in point of temper, but this is my temper. I can't let anybody have entirely their own way. You are a determined woman, and a clever woman, and when you see your purpose before you, nothing will turn you from it. Who knows that better than I do? Apostrophe, apostrophe, nothing will turn me from it, Flintwinch, when I have justified it to myself. At that. Apostrophe, justified it to yourself? I said you were the most determined woman on the face of the earth, or I meant to say so, and if you are determined to justify any object you entertain, of course you will do it. Apostrophe, man. I justify myself by the authority of these books, apostrophe she cried, with stern emphasis, and appearing from the sound that followed to strike the dead weight of her arm upon the table. Never mind that, apostrophe returned Jeremiah calmly, we won't enter into that question at present. However that may be, you carry out your purposes, and you make everything go down before them. Now, I won't go down before them. I have been faithful to you, and useful to you, and I am attached to you. But I can't consent, and I won't consent, and I never did consent, and I never will consent to be lost in you. Swallow up everybody else, and welcome. The peculiarity of my temper is, ma'am, that I won't be swallowed up alive. Apostrophe, perhaps this had originally been the mainspring of the understanding between them. Descrying thus much of force of character in Mr. Flintwinch, perhaps Mrs. Clennam had deemed alliance with him worth her while. Enough and more than enough of the subject, apostrophe said she gloomily. Unless you drop down upon me again, apostrophe returned the persistent Flintwinch, and then you must expect to hear of it again. Apostrophe, Mistress Affery dreamed that the figure of her lord here began walking up and down the room, as if to cool his spleen, and that she ran away, but that, as he did not issue forth, when she had stood listening and trembling in the shadowy hall a little time, she crept upstairs again, impelled as before by ghosts and curiosity, and once more cowered outside the door. Please to light the candle, Flintwinch, apostrophe Mrs. Clennam was saying, apparently wishing to draw him back into their usual tone. It is nearly time for tea. Little Dorrit is coming, and will find me in the dark. Apostrophe, Mr. Flintwinch lighted the candle briskly, and said as he put it down upon the table. What are you going to do with Little Dorrit? Is she to come to work here forever? To come to tea here forever? To come backwards and forwards here, in the same way, forever? Apostrophe, apostrophe, how can you talk about forever to a maimed creature like me? Are we not all cut down like the grass of the field, and was not I shorn by the scythe many years ago? Since when I have been lying here, waiting to be gathered into the barn? Apostrophe, apostrophe, But since you have been lying here, not near dead, nothing like it, numbers of children and young people, blooming women, strong men, and what not, have been cut down and carried. And still here are you, you see, not much changed after all. Your time and mine may be a long one yet. When I say forever, I mean, though I am not poetical, through all our time. Apostrophe Mr. Flintwinch gave this explanation with great calmness, and calmly waited for an answer. So long as Little Dorrit is quiet and industrious, and stands in need of the slight help I can give her, and deserves it, So long, I suppose, unless she withdraws of her own act, she will continue to come here, I being spared. Apostrophe, nothing more than that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Flintwinch, stroking his mouth and chin. What should there be more than that? What could there be more than that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she ejaculated, in her sternly wondering way. Mrs. Flintwinch dreamed that, for the space of a minute or two, they remained looking at each other with the candle between them, and that she somehow derived an impression that they looked at each other fixedly. Do you happen to know, Mrs. Clennam, apostrophe Afery's liege lord then demanded in a much lower voice, and with an amount of expression that seemed quite out of proportion to the simple purpose of his words, where she lives? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no. Apostrophe, would you now, would you like to know? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Jeremiah with a pounce, as if he had sprung upon her. If I cared to know, I should know already. Could I not have asked her any day? Apostrophe, apostrophe, then you don't care to know? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I do not. Apostrophe, Mr. Flintwinch, having expelled a long significant breath, said, with his former emphasis, for I have accidentally mined. Found out. Apostrophe, wherever she lives, apostrophe, said Mrs. Clennam, speaking in one unmodulated hard voice, and separating her words as distinctly as if she were reading them off from separate bits of metal, that she took up one by one, she has made a secret of it, and she shall always keep her secret from me. Apostrophe, after all, perhaps you would rather not have known the fact, anyhow? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Jeremiah. And he said it with a twist, as if his words had come out of him in his own wry shape. Flintwinch, apostrophe, said his mistress and partner, flashing into a sudden energy that made Afery start. Why do you goad me? Look round this room. If it is any compensation for my long confinement within these narrow limits, not that I complain of being afflicted. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.